Welcome back. You're listening to From a Stranger to a Stranger. My name is Issa Martel, and today is Friday, the 16th of Rajab, 1443 Hijri, which equals Friday, February 18th, 2022. Yeah, it's been a while since I made a podcast. I got a different position in my job, and basically a massive promotion, and I have to do training for 6 months, and so we're kind of like halfway through the training now. and in the training, I have to go on my trainer schedule, which is someone different every week. So I keep flip-flopping around, and it's basically just messed up my whole routine that I have in getting stuff done. So when that's done, hopefully things will be a lot different. But in any case, today, Kim Potter got sentenced to 16 months in prison, and then 8 months supervised release for killing Dante Wright. So this is an interesting sentence. And I'm wondering if the sentence was because she didn't intend to kill him, which I don't think that she did, but the intention, you know, the law is not intention. That's not the law. That's not how the laws work. The laws work, did you do this or didn't you do this? It doesn't matter whether you wanted to or not, or your intention behind doing it. But perhaps the intention comes out in the sentencing. And maybe that's where the judge can have some leeway, you know, and do things. But this, and so I can go with that being the case here. But I still think that 16 months is not 2 years. Her sentence is 2 years. Is not, I mean, I just don't see that being long enough. And the reason why is because of her position. It's not fitting, I believe anyway, that she gets such a short sentence after being in the police department and how long she had been, and her position in the police department. So this is from CBS Minnesota, and they posted this at 11 o'clock a.m. this morning. Former Brooklyn Center police officer Kim Potter, who was convicted of manslaughter in December for shooting and killing Dante Wright, has been sentenced to 2 years, 16 months, of which will be served in prison. The remaining 8 months will be on supervised release. Judge Regina Chu said that this was the case of a cop, quote, a cop who made a tragic mistake. She drew her firearm thinking it was a taser and ended up killing a young man. So what this is my point about this, and this is the reason why I can't, I really struggle with such a short sentence, because she's trained. So either she was so hyped up in emotion that her instincts kicked in, which is to draw your firearm, not a taser, right? That she drew the firearm and shot him. And if that is the case, then why is that a reflection of the training that they have, that emotion would, like your adrenaline, like, was not enough, like the taser training did not meet the level of the firearm training, so that your brain, because she was yelling taser, right, but she drew her firearm, so that means that her natural inclination is to draw the firearm instantly. If something's going down, draw the firearm. And even her thinking didn't break that. Her brain, the drilling of drawing the firearm is so great that her brain thinking I want to draw my taser and taser him was not enough to break that instinct. So that should show, right, that they probably don't even have taser training. I mean, how, you know, you draw, I mean, it takes, you know, a couple minutes to learn how to fire a taser. That's it. You know what I mean? That's probably all they had. So I don't really feel bad that she was, I don't feel bad that this woman was guilty, like I said before. And, yeah, I can even buy that. I don't believe that she didn't want to kill this kid. I mean, I don't believe that she intentionally was going in there to kill him. And then her mom, let's keep going. The court approved a downward departure from the typical sentence, as Chu said Potter never intended to use her firearm and the scene was chaotic. Or there's what I just was talking about, right? So if the scene was chaotic, like I said, you know, that her training should have been sufficient to keep her head during the chaos. That's what I expect from someone who was a police officer for 20 years, you know, and her level in the police office, the police department itself. Peter shot Wright, a 20-year-old black motorist, during a traffic stop. Peter Potter shot Wright, a 20-year-old black motorist, during a traffic stop on April 11, 2021. She said she meant to use her taser, not her gunshot, but shot him once in the chest. She was found guilty of first-degree and second-degree manslaughter on December 23rd after roughly 4 days of jury deliberation. Before Potter was sentenced on Friday, Wright's family members gave victim impact statements. Katie Wright, Dante Wright's mother, gave the first impact statement, tearfully saying to Potter, "I'll never be able to forgive you for what you stole from us." She asked Judge Regina Chu to hold Potter to the highest accountability. Wright's father, Aubrey Wright, said, "Dante meant the world to me. She was a police officer longer than my son was alive," Aubrey Wright said, while asking for Chu to apply the maximum sentence to Potter. There it is, right? So, I mean, how, you know, he said it best, you know, she was a police officer longer than he was alive. You should be trained. And I get everyone makes mistakes. I mean, that's how it is. But I just can't believe that if this was, I believe this was a mistake, but it's a mistake that is reflective to how the police operate now, right? How, either how they're trained, what they're thinking, the mentality, whatever, you know. And what makes it worse is that, you know, she shot a black kid, right? In the middle, when this happened, the city was, like, burning down when this happened. right, from the previous incident of a cop, a white cop, choking out a black man for 9 minutes. You know, so then, okay, so we'll keep going here. he could light up a whole stadium with his smile and laugh, Diamond Wright, Dante's sister, said at the podium. China Whitaker, the mother of Dante's child, gave the last victim impact statement. Kim Potter took my son's best friend away from him, and things haven't been the same since, she said. I am now a single mother, not by choice, by force. Which is a powerful statement, too. Kim Potter speaks to Wright family. Defense attorney Paul Engi, during a 45-minute statement, said Potter was particularly amenable for probation as she does not have a record. Of course she's not going to have a record because she was a cop, right? So, I mean, this is, like, hilarious. Has no risk of recidivism, and she can never be a police officer again. He held up a box of letters Potter has received since she was convicted and said that she has lived a virtuous Catholic life. He argued that 60% of the time sentencing guidelines aren't followed for women because they are too high. And this is crap right here. This statement is, who cares about the letters she received, right? Who cares that she's Catholic, you know, when we're in the laws aren't based off, like, religion doesn't, the whole point of everything is that religion is not a part of it. But I guess he's trying to implement that she lived a virtuous, he could have said religious life, right? He could have said a virtuous religious life. He also argued, whatever. And if sentencing guidelines are too high for women, then they should stop saying that they want equality, you know? If sentencing guidelines are, they're too high. After a break, Potter approached the podium and turned around to face the family members of Dante Wright. I'm sorry that I brought death to your son, brother, father, uncle, grandson, she said. Katie, I understand a mother's love, and I'm sorry I broke your heart. Earlier when you said I didn't look at you during the trial, I didn't believe I had the right to, she said. Potter broke down, adding that I pray for Dante and all of you many, many times a day. He is not more than one thought away from my heart, and I have no right for that, for him to be in my heart. She apologized to the community of Brooklyn Center, saying she loved working for the people, for the city, and the people still working there are good, honorable people. I mean, this is the problem with this type of stuff. You know, is she really, I mean, she shot someone and killed him, and it was a kid, and that has to be horrible. Right, I can't imagine that being a thing that's not wrecking her. It's the statement, I don't know. You know, if you want, I don't know. I guess I'm more of a suck it up, Katie. You shot the kid, and nobody wants to hear your crying, you know? Because right now you look like a Karen. That's kind of what I feel watching this and listening to this. Wright expresses disappointment. Wright family expresses disappointment, which I am disappointed as well. After the sentencing, family members gathered outside of the Hennepin County Courthouse expressing their disappointment. Kim Potter murdered my son and he died April 11th. Katie Wright said, today the justice system murdered him all over again. The family's attorney, Ben Crump, said there was an apples-to-apples comparison to the case of Muhammad Noor, a Somali-American former Minneapolis police officer who was convicted of manslaughter, death of Justin Damon, who was white. Noor was initially sentenced to 12 years in prison before he was resentenced in 2021 on a lesser charge. And that says it all. I mean, like, come on. Come on. Here, and then this is a quote. He says, we see what we see today is the legal system in America is black and white. And it is. I mean, there's no... it's completely crazy, right? Completely crazy. That's a good... I didn't even think about that. And I always bring up Muhammad Noor, right? Always. Because he's the only... I mean, if you don't know who Muhammad Noor is, he was the first Minneapolis police officer to get convicted of something, right? But he was also the first, like, Somali police officer there ever was. And he shot a white woman and got, and then got convicted. But all, like, the white police had been shooting and killing the black people, and they never got convicted. So this is, like, a whole massive issue, you know? So it's, you know, laughable that he got 12 years for the same crime and she got 2 years. Right. Anything else? Now they're just going into more. But here we go. This is good to know. By Minnesota law, Potter was sentenced only on the higher charge of first-degree manslaughter. The maximum charge is 15 years, but for someone with no criminal history like Potter, guidelines range between 6 and 8.5 years. Okay, of course she's not going to have a criminal history because she's a cop, right? So, you know, whatever. But still, the guidelines are 6 to 8.5, right? And she got 2, right? So, I'm going to tell you, and I don't know. I bet, well, we don't need to bet. We don't have to bet or anything about a black person in this position because we have the case of Muhammad Noor, who just proved it, right? That the black guy gets the longer sentence than the white person. This is clear evidence of that. I wasn't even, like, talk about this, right? The reason I thought to make a podcast was because yesterday was Amir Locke's funeral, right? So Amir Locke, once again here in Minneapolis, was killed by a police officer, right? He was killed, he was 22, and killed on a no-knock warrant, right? And this one's crazy, because the warrant even wasn't for him. The person, apparently, that the warrant was for was not there. And how he died is because he had, I guess when they did the no-knock warrant, you can watch the video, he is sleeping on the couch and rises up and he has a gun, right? Apparently he was sleeping with the gun under his pillow. But if you watch this video, his hand isn't on the trigger or anything like that. Like, if you gave the command to someone to put the gun down, this is what it would look like, that he's putting the gun down, right? Now, I mentioned this to someone else, and they said, oh, but it only takes, you know how fast you can pull your finger back and it'll be on the trigger and you can shoot. Yes, I do know that. All right. But that's not the case here. Because he got shot and killed. Right. I don't feel that there is any way this kid could have survived this confrontation. On the simple fact that he was sleeping with the covers over his head and had the firearm under the pillow. which is all legal, right? You can sleep with a gun with you. Many people do this. They have a gun right on the side, the dresser or whatever, right next to them. So there's nothing, he did nothing wrong, you know, and you can argue the cop, whatever, he thought he was picking up the gun to shoot him or pointing the gun at him. The freeze frame part I have, the gun is pointing to the ground, but, you know, you don't really know in, like, the millisecond of time. But it all goes back to the craziness of the Minneapolis Police Department, right? Or just Minneapolis in general. I mean, I don't know. I really don't know. he got shot and killed, and I don't know. It's just a sad situation. Here's a quote from one of the articles. The article's about his funeral yesterday, but this is from ABC News. Body camera video shows officers executing the warrant and finding Locke, who didn't live at the home, sleeping under a blanket on the couch. Locke was seen holding a gun as he sat up. He was shot less than 10 seconds after the officer entered the room, still covered in the blanket. There you go. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, now cops can just come in your house and kill you. And this cop will probably get off again, off on it, right? I don't know if I agree with the no-knock warrant. In this situation, clearly not. In fact, I don't agree with it. I don't agree with a no-knock warrant at all. And only because it opens the door for them just entering your house. And using some reasoning for that. And so, well, I can see there being times when a no-knock warrant would be warranted, but I can't see, they just shouldn't exist because of incidents like this. And they had Al Sharpton there at the funeral. He said that's why it didn't matter that Amir's name wasn't on the warrant, because we don't have a right to a name in the eyes of some in this country. We are nameless suspects. There you go. We are no longer going to be your nameless suspects, Sharpton said. Amir had a name. His name wasn't on your warrant, but his name's going to be in your law book. Yep. Another sad, 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 sad incident. After the city was burning, you know, like just 2 years ago, almost 2 years ago, this happened. Both of these incidents happened since then. I don't really know. I don't know what's going on. Speaking of the city burning, I was. I don't know if I thought this about this or how this idea got formulated to me, but why is it that people are against Black Lives Matter, for example, and them protesting and then burning stuff down, when during the formation of our country, we did the same thing in Boston when the protesters boarded the ships and dumped everything overboard and, you know, havoc ensued. I think they actually lit the boats on fire, too. You know, so, you know, this makes me think again that it's racism. Right, that it's racism, because our country, you know, when you look at the people who did this, they were white people. And our country, the history of our country is mainly white people coming here and making a new country, right? Right, so, but all you see in the imagery is white people, like the heroes were the white people. So they were the good guys, right? So our actions of the U.S., meaning not a racial action, the actions of the U.S. And in history are viewed as, like, the good guys, you know. But really, were they the good guys? I mean, they did revolt against, England, right? So, you know, it's convoluted, I guess. But my point is that, you know, why is that type of destruction okay when the actions of what's going on now during protesting is not okay, right? Because you only, and I mentioned this because you always hear, oh yeah, I was behind them until they started burning and looting and stuff, right? But which is exactly what, I mean, I don't know if there was looting going on at the Boston Tea Party, but there was destruction, right? I mean, that was like a huge event, you know, a massive event that brought on, like, the Revolutionary War, right? The Boston Tea Party. Yeah, like, in this, like, painting, they're, like, dumping the tea overboard. And there's, like, some guys on, like, canoes, like, I don't know if they're stealing the tea or what. But, yeah, that's okay. Here we go, the Boston Tea Party. December 16th, 1777. Was an American and political mercantile protest by the Sons of Liberty. A lovely group in Boston. The target was the Tea Act of May 10th, 1777, which allowed the British East India Company to sell tea from China to America colonies without paying taxes apart from those imposed by the Townsend Acts. The Sons of Liberty strongly opposed the taxes in the Townsend Act, which I believe is also called the Stamp Act. I think that's what the Townsend Act was. Protesters, some disguised as American Indians, destroyed an entire shipment of tea sent by the East India Company. The demonstrators boarded the ships and threw the chests of tea into Boston Harbor. The British government responded harshly, and the episode escalated into the American Revolution. The Tea Party became an iconic event of American history, and since then, other political protests, such as the Tea Party movement, have referred themselves as historical successors of the Boston Tea Party. Yeah, so you know, why is that action okay? Right, that action is okay, but protesting and, say, like, burning down the police department, or not the department, but a police station, you know, would that be a similar thing? When people thought there was an injustice done, right? And this was only over opposing taxes, right? So that even makes it even worse. This was for opposing taxes, but yet a certain chunk of the country is opposed to the other chunk killing them. It is, man, I don't know. I don't know what's going on with the world. If we're coming down, is this the beginning of, like, the decline of the civilization, like America, you know? If you look in, like, an expanse of time, like, from the beginning, like, from, like, 200 years ago, and maybe another, you go forward another 100 years, or whenever the country, like, falls apart, and there's a new form of government formed, are we going to look at this as the beginning of the end of it? Because we have a problem with racism, right? And I think that it will always be a problem because the Constitution was written during a time period when racism was not only tolerated, but you know, people had slaves. And it was, like, the worst form of slavery throughout all of history. No slave in America would have been a slave and still rose to positions in government or advisors or this type of thing. That slavery institutions from the past would have allowed and would have done. That would have never happened here. So, because, you know, that is, part of the whole thing, you know, I think now the country is struggling. It's been struggling with it since the beginning. You know, you had the beginning, you had then the free the slavery, then you had the civil rights movement. You know, and now we're up to this. You know, when is it going to end? I don't know, but I'm still a little bit sick. My throat is a little bit sore, so I'm just going to end it here for today. Till next time, salam alaikum, peace be unto you.